Well, good morning. If you would grab a Bible, let's turn to 1 Peter chapter 4. 1 Peter 4. We'll be focusing our attention here, 1 Peter 4. So if you are interested in following along, it would be a good place for you to have open. Otherwise, it might be a little confusing, and especially there will be one part in the lesson where you're very confused, and we'll get there shortly. Thank you so much for being here this morning. And I appreciate the kind words that have been said, and enjoyed trying to get to know you. And as I said, I appreciate your patience, as you know, sometimes it's hard to read faces and lips and things through masks, and we're just making do the best we can in the time that we're in. But very excited to be with you, and looking forward to this weekend. And hopefully, the things that we're going to share and think about for these few minutes will be a benefit to you. And if you are not a disciple of Jesus and you're just visiting here with us, we're very interested in you, and we want you to know that if there are questions that are raised about something that's said, if there is something that I say that you say, I want to know more about that, or what did you mean by that, I'd be happy to talk with you about that. We're glad that you're here and would do anything we can to try to help you know more about Jesus. So thank you so much for being here. We're going to read in 1 Peter 4 and verse 1 to begin with. 1 Peter 4 and verse 1. Since, therefore, Christ suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves with the same way of thinking, for whoever has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live for the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for human passions, but for the will of God. For the time that is past suffices for doing what the Gentiles want to do, living in sensuality, passions, drunkenness, orgies, drinking parties, and lawless idolatry. With respect to this, they are surprised when you do not join with them in the same flood of debauchery, and they malign you. But they will give account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. When Jesus started calling people to be disciples, he told them to be different. He said, you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. You are a city set on a hill. And when he did that, he was playing on a long history in the Bible of God calling his people to be different from those in the world. When Cain kills Abel, very, very early in the Bible story, you see a divergence where Cain's line grows more and more evil, where the line that Abel would have had, Seth's line, becomes more and more what God is going to use. Difference emerges very early. God calls his people out of Egypt. They are different from the world, to be different in God's, to be different in their attitudes, to be different in the way they treated others. And he expressed that differentness as holiness. Separation. So when Peter talks about Christians living differently, it's not something new, that we're not what the Gentiles are. We're not what unbelievers are. That's something that is very old in terms of an idea. But he wants Christians to steel themselves for some of the sting that comes with differentness. It may even be that differentness itself will challenge us and lead to suffering for us. But the question I want to ask is, why are we so different? What is it about Christians that makes us different? And that's the question Peter is going to answer for us, and I want to pursue for a few minutes. Why Christians are different? And I want to say to begin with, Christians are not different for several reasons that I think you might, maybe in the back of your mind, think are true. For example, Christians are not different because we really enjoy being weird. There are some people, and even some Christians, who are just weird. And they enjoy being different, and that's who they are, because they are weird people. But that's not what makes Christians different. We're not different because we hate people, or because we hate our culture, or because we hate fun. And if there's any fun, we just have to say, no, that's probably evil. We're not different because we feel like we're better than everybody else. We've got it figured out, and they don't. So why are we different? I want us to pursue that for a few minutes this morning. First of all, Christians are different because we are following a different example, and the example we are following is Jesus. The letter of 1 Peter is directed to Christians who are either going through suffering right now, or they're shortly to start going through some suffering. And so Peter is preparing them mentally for what is ahead of them. And one of the ways he does that is to keep going back to Jesus. Remember how Jesus was willing to suffer, and you emulate him. you follow his example. So turn back a page to 1 Peter 2. In 1 Peter 2 and verse 20, if you're suffering, it helps to remember that Jesus suffered too. 1 Peter 2 and verse 20, he says, for what credit is it if when you sin and are beaten for it, you endure? But if when you do good and suffer for it, you endure, this is a gracious thing in the sight of God. For to this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example that you might follow in his steps. So he is specifically saying Jesus suffered for doing right. It's not a value to suffer for doing wrong. That's not somehow Christian. But he says when you suffer for doing right, there can be a tension in you. It seems so unfair. If you've ever had that happen, or maybe as a parent, if you've ever accused the wrong child and you see that look of just horror, I didn't do it this time, it was him. That look, that unjust feeling is something you have to be prepared for. And he says, guess who prepares you best for that? The example you're following is the example of somebody who suffered even though he did no wrong, no deceit, no sin. So you follow Jesus, and in doing so, you are prepared for what's ahead. Turn the page to 1 Peter 3. 1 Peter 3 and verse 18. He says, for Christ also suffered once for sins, the righteous for the unrighteous, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but made alive in the spirit. And then in chapter 4 and verse 1, since therefore Christ suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves with the same way of thinking, for whoever has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. So we need to arm ourselves in the same way of thinking. We need to think like Jesus. Can we think that Jesus would suffer in the flesh, but that we would never have to? Oh no, I'm way above that. I mean, Jesus, Son of God, yeah, he might have to suffer, but Jacob, nah, I'm too good for that. He says, if you're following his example, then you have to have that same mindset. From Jesus, we gain the perspective that suffering and hardship are not a deal breaker. They do not mean that God has forsaken us, that God doesn't care, that we're on the wrong path. What they mean instead is that there are bigger things than our comfort in the moment. He says in verse 1, whoever has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. That's a challenging little phrase there. I don't think what he is saying is that if we suffer, our sin struggle is over. You know, as long as you've suffered, you never struggle with sin. I think what he is saying is that when all of our sin battle is viewed broadly, it's not as big a deal as the fact that we are willing, like Jesus, to suffer in whatever way. If that struggle is suffering, guess what? Jesus had to suffer in the flesh. We may suffer in the flesh. None of it is a deterrent. None of it is a deal breaker. So we are different as Christians because we refuse to bend to the social pressure around us. That's what Jesus did. Jesus had opportunities to back away from suffering. He had opportunities to say, I'm going to call down 12 legions of angels. He had opportunities to say, I'm going to follow the crowd who wants to make me king. He had opportunities to say, Peter, you know what? You're right. Far be it from me that I would suffer like this. And yet at every turn, Jesus says, no, I'm not going to do what people want me to do. I'm going to follow the Father. And so when we are different, it is because we follow the Father and not people. We don't check the temperature in the room before we decide who we're going to follow. Instead, we say, I'm going to follow God no matter what, because that's what Jesus did. So we are different because we're following a different path. We don't let other people, especially people who are determined to serve sin and to serve themselves, we don't let them dictate who we're going to be and what we're going to do. And that makes us different. In that, we follow Jesus. Second, Christians are different because we are living for a different purpose. We are living for the will of God. Look in chapter 4 and verse 2 here, 1 Peter 4, 2. So as to live for the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for human passions, but for the will of God. We have lived for human passions, and we have found human passions woefully lacking. So he says, we now live for something higher. We live for the will of God, something nobler and wiser, something transcendent. Something that's bigger than just what I want all the time. Now, I know myself. I know you guys don't know me well, but I know myself. And so I'll just tell you a little bit about myself here. I know that I have desires that in almost every situation are not good. And if I had my way, my will, I am pretty confident that it would look like me perpetually sitting on my couch, eating pizza, and watching football. That's it. I would not ever do any work. I don't like work. Work is hard. I would probably not get up. I would just be. I wouldn't want to do anything challenging or hard. I wouldn't want to discipline myself. Instead, I would just live for my human passions. But at some point, don't we make a decision that says, you know what, this is probably not the best life for me. I mean, after all, somehow I've got to make money so I can get more pizza. So maybe we need to get off the couch. Or if I want to have relationships, maybe that's going to require me doing something besides just what I want all the time. At some point, we make the decision to say, I can't just do what I want all the time anymore. That's the decision Christians have made. We don't live just for ourselves, he says, no longer for human passions, but for the will of God. Because we know a God who wants what is best for us, and he gives us instructions that are truly for our good, not just to boss us around, not just to give random rules, but they're good for us, and they will develop us into the kind of people that we can be proud of who we are because we know God has led us to who we are. Verse 3, 1 Peter 4 and verse 3, for the time that is past suffices for doing what the Gentiles want to do, living in sensuality, passions, drunkenness, orgies, drinking parties, and lawless idolatry. With respect to this, they are surprised when you do not join them in the same flood of debauchery, and they malign you. So he talks about the Gentiles here, and the Gentiles are representative of everyone who doesn't follow the true God. Now, in the ancient world, the Gentiles were known for following gods. They were a people that followed gods. It's just that their gods were, let's just say, a little fickle. Their gods couldn't be trusted. You don't know what's going to happen. If you call on Zeus, if you call on Poseidon, I mean, they may be in a good mood or they may have had a bad day. They may like you or they may decide to strike you dead. You just have no idea because their gods are not concerned at all about you. Their gods are only in it for themselves. We don't serve a God like that. And so when we serve a God, we serve a God who does not just want self to reign and us to focus on self-interest. Instead, we can trust him to lead us to a better path of life. We have a different purpose, a purpose that is not about an arbitrary, capricious God, but a will of God that's for our good. Now, one of the things Peter points out here is that has a response from other people who don't live for our purpose. Did you notice that? In verse 4, he talks about that they will malign you and they are surprised when you don't join them. It is staggering to me how true that is through the centuries. That when people don't live like other people, there is resentment that grows and there are names that are called. So it may be that people call you names when you are different from living for yourself. For example, they will call you hateful and bigoted. They will call you repressed or puritanical. They will call you narrow-minded or goody-two-shoes or ignorant or antiquated. But people who live for their own passions respond with hatred toward those who don't. That's the fact Peter lays down. And so we need to be prepared for that. We're going to be different. And if we're different, it's going to elicit a response from them. So we seek not our own glory, not our own will, but we seek the will of God. And the things that we do and that we don't do are good things. God's will is good, and that makes us different from those who just live for themselves. The third thing here is that Christians are different because we are dealing with our past differently. The way Peter phrases it is that we have wasted enough time. Look with me at verse 3. Verse 3 of 1 Peter 4, for the time that is past suffices for doing what the Gentiles want to do, living in sensuality, passions, drunkenness, orgies, drinking parties, and lawless idolatry. He says we don't spend the rest of our time in the flesh. You notice that in verse 2? We don't spend the rest of our time in the flesh the way we spent the previous time. We have had enough. I love that word in verse 3. It says the time that has passed. In my version, it says suffices. The word is enough. We've had enough. We've gone far enough. We've wasted enough time. It's time for a change for disciples of Jesus. So then he describes a number of things that characterize Gentile living. Let's just look at them briefly in verse 3. It says living in sensuality. Sensuality is the idea of over-sexuality. Sexuality in any context. It's always appropriate to talk about sex. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, it always fits in the conversation. That is sensuality. Then it says passions, which is simply the idea of lusts or desires or cravings. It says drunkenness, orgies, and drinking parties, which are just different forms of the idea of alcohol. And so what you kind of mash all that together, and what you get is that same lifestyle that still exists in our time that combines drunken rowdiness and sexuality together. It's a party. And he says, this is what Gentiles do. Now, he also says lawless idolatry in verse 3, which reminds us that this was often a part of their worship. This is how they worshiped in the ancient world. But Peter says, we've done enough of that. We've wasted enough time in that. Now it's time for Christians to live different. That's important to me. Can I tell you why? It's important because what Peter's wording means is that Christians are not different because we don't have the impulses the world has, that we don't have their desires. We're just different. We've just sublimated everything because we're so spiritual. That's not the idea. Nor are we somehow better or even think we're better than other people who do enjoy those things. He says the time that is past suffices in doing that. That's who we used to be. And the difference that Jesus makes in our lives is that we have made a decision because of what we have learned from him that we want to live differently now. We are dealing with our past in a different way than the rest of the world. We're trying to learn from our past so that we don't go down the same road that we used to go down. We don't become the same person we used to be. We want to be different, better people. We see that that's a dead end. We see what that kind of living did to our relationships. We see that what we used to happen is that we used to chase one high, one passion, one joy after another, and we just kept ending up with nothing. It was a bucket that was full of holes, and we couldn't get anything in it that would sustain our lives. We needed something deeper and better, and we found it in Jesus. And so now when those temptations come calling, it's not that there is no part of us that would go back to that and is interested in that. It is that we have decided enough. I've wasted enough of my time doing things that don't really benefit. Regrets are universal. Christians are trying to live better than the things they regret. I think it's important, especially I think you can probably tell that a lot of the things I'm trying to discuss have to do with our young people. I think it's important for our young people to know. Sometimes I remember being a younger man, looking around a church building and thinking, wow, all these people, I mean, everybody's got their suits on and stuff. I mean, everybody looks like they kind of got it all together. They look like the kind of people that would never have the kinds of struggles I would have. And it has helped me in doing the work of preaching and getting to know people on a deeper level to learn that everybody has these struggles. We're all the same. It's just that some of us, in fact, I would say most of us are here in this building this morning because we know that the way of sin is a dead end. We don't know that because we are better than that. We know that because we've gone down the road. And we have turned around and said, this is not the way to go anymore. And we want to help other people to avoid that same road. We have been where people in our world are, and we have found salvation from it. That's why Christians are different. And so I will put all my energy into running in the other direction and to helping everyone I know to run away from things that I know are a dead end and full of evil. Now again, that decision though, the idea that we say we've wasted enough time, that has some fallout. Look again at verse 4 with me. It says, with respect to this, they are surprised when you do not join them in the same flood of debauchery and they malign you. I just want us to know and point out here, if we don't do what the world does, people think we're weird. It's going to happen. And that's a particular challenge for our young people. In a time in our lives where we begin to think that what people think and say about us is so important, and we set our clocks by our reputation. So we need to say it very clearly That means, teenagers, when you make a choice to be different, you will not be as popular. That means that that guy or that girl will not like you as well if they discover you are not sexually available. That means that you may miss that promotion. You may get passed over, maybe even fired, because there are connections you won't make and places you won't go and things you won't do. And we need to be ready for that. Peter says that is part and parcel of the differentness and the response it produces in the world. But Christians are different because we refuse to keep going down a path we've been down, and we will suffer the consequences of that gladly, because we've seen worse consequences when we continue to live for evil. We have wasted enough time. The fourth thing I want to show you here is that we are living on a different timetable. That is, we are talking about the end. I hope you've noticed as we've gone through this text, we've talked a lot about time. We talked about wasting time, we've spent enough time, and we want to spend the rest of our time in the flesh living in a certain way. Peter pulls our attention further ahead. Look beyond this moment, this year. Look beyond. Where are you headed? Look in verse 4. 1 Peter 4 and verse 4, it says, "With respect to this, they are surprised when you do not join them in the same flood of debauchery, and they malign you, but they will give an account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead." They will give account. He is ready to judge the living and the dead, all people for all time. And especially, Peter wants us to know that the judgment of God is different from the judgment of the world. People and God don't see things the same way. So if you're most concerned about what people think about you, then you're probably going to be off in terms of what God thinks about you. Look at verse 6 with me, 1 Peter 4 and verse 6. "For this is why the gospel was preached, even to those who are dead, that though judged in the flesh the way people are, they might live in the spirit the way God does." All right, well, I told you there would be a point in the lesson where you would say you're really confused. If you heard what I just read, you're really confused. That's a confusing verse, and we do not have time to really plumb the depths of it. I will give you my thoughts on this, because it's relevant to what we're discussing about the end. Peter is talking about how people often judge in a different way than God does, and that sometimes there are people who live and people judge them as if they're not good, but God judges them differently. And so he talks about in verse 6 how there are those who are preached the gospel to who are dead, and I think the idea is that they are now dead, that though judged in the flesh the way people are, they might live in the spirit the way God does. So they heard the gospel, people condemned them, people criticized them, and yet God has accepted them and vindicated them when people dismissed them. Peter has already talked about in this letter some of the great men and women of faith in the ancient world. He has talked about holy women like Sarah. He's talked about prophets who foresaw Jesus. He has talked about Noah and his family. And here he says, you know, all of those people, they may be dead now, and the world may not have even noticed them, but they live in the spirit the way God does. And they will await a fair and just judgment that is different from the way their contemporaries viewed them. Do you hear the difference? It is vital that we see God doesn't see like man sees. So we don't bother with others' opinions of us. Verse 7, "The end of all things is at hand. Therefore, be self-controlled and sober-minded for the sake of your prayers." Christians live with the urgency of knowing that Jesus is coming back, and we don't know when. So there is a limited time in which we have an opportunity to live here on earth in a way that shows our allegiance to him. The judge is coming back. Now, when you contrast that with the world, it's a very interesting thing, because our world lives in time denial. We like to act as if we've got all the time we could ever need. Particularly, our culture says the idea of death is not something to be discussed openly, is to be shoved aside, and we quickly change the subject. We like to act and think like we won't die. Things will just continue the way they are forever. Christians are not so. We are aware that not only do we have a short time here on earth, but that there are wonderful things that lie on the other side of our mortality as the judge stands at the door. We look forward to a time when all the wrongs will be set right. That gives us some calm and some peace, especially in turbulent times. We look forward to a time when death is conquered, when our bodies are raised immortal, when we live with Jesus forever, and that gives us security. We say, I know that's going to happen. So whatever is going on in our world, whatever is going on in our communities, whatever is going on in our families, whatever is going on with our friends, nothing changes the time perspective that says our best days are yet to come. That makes Christians different because our world doesn't live with that optimism. Christians also know that the time is coming when no man can work. And so there is an urgency. If there are things to be done, they need to be done. I need to be busy. I need to work hard for the Lord because the judge is standing at the door. So Christians are different. Not because we are better, not because we are weird, not because we are hateful, not because we've got everything figured out, but we're different because God has touched our lives and we don't want to go back. But I'm not quite done yet. Somebody is wondering, okay, that all sounds great, but what do you mean by different? What does different mean? And so I want to say, first of all, that different means we don't do what the world does. We talked about that back in verse 3, right? Time has passed, suffices for doing the will of the Gentiles and all the things that they did. The world lives these indulgent, short-sighted, self-harmful lives. And Christians don't do that. We don't live that way. The world lives for pleasure and excitement. They live for get all you can get. And Christians don't live that way. But I want to be very clear. That is not all that is involved in being different from the world. Differentness is not what you don't do. So I also want to say that different means we do things the world doesn't. And I want to call your attention to verse 7. 1 Peter 4 and verse 7. It says, the end of all things is at hand. Therefore, be self-controlled and sober-minded for the sake of your prayers. Christians are careful and serious and thoughtful. Christians are people who seek wisdom. Christians are people who want to use our time well. We refuse to waste our lives. And so we are sober-minded, and we are especially, he says in verse 7, devoted to prayer, because we know there is a God who is active in the world to bless all his creatures and to bring his will to pass, and we want to be partners with him in that. And that means there are things that we do that in praying relieve our anxiety and focus our attention on God's will for the world. In verse 8, he says, above all, keep loving one another earnestly, since love covers a multitude of sins. We love one another earnestly. That's what Christians do. There are people that we are extremely close to. I'm talking about other Christians because these are people that we are in the foxhole with. We are doing the work. We are fighting the battles together. And there is a connection that is forged in those moments that is deep and abiding and full of love. Love one another earnestly because love covers a multitude of sins, which means that sometimes we're going to have those moments where we have to confront one another and challenge one another, that we have to pray with one another over broken hearts and over broken lives that sin has wrecked. And yet we restore one another and we keep checking and holding one another accountable because we know we love and there is an urgency to what we do. In verse 9, 1 Peter 4, 9, show hospitality to one another without grumbling. We are hospitable to one another. This is about love and acceptance of those who are different from us. The idea of the love of the stranger. It means that we care and we bless and we help and we welcome, especially people who are different from us. Now, in the ancient world, it was really hard if you're traveling in a place where you're not from to pull out your phone and book a hotel on an app. There were no hotels. Obviously, there were no phones. So what do? You rely on people in that community to bring in a stranger and meet the needs of a stranger. This is what hospitality meant, that stranger love. That makes Christians different. That's not the way worldly people think. That's not the way they treat strangers. And yet Christians are different. Verse 10, as each has received a gift, use it to serve one another as good stewards of God's varied grace. Whoever speaks, as one who speaks oracles of God. Whoever serves, as one who serves by the strength that God supplies, in order that in everything God may be glorified through Jesus Christ. To him belong glory and dominion forever and ever. Amen. Christians use their gifts, not for ourselves, not to make money, not to make people look at me, look what I can do, sing my praises. But we use our gifts to serve one another. Because each of us has ways that we can bless the broader body of Christ and we use them. And so it raises the question, how am I helping the people around me? What has God given me that I can use to help you and give to you? How am I encouraging and blessing you? Now, I know I've just thrown a lot of things at you, but I want to say a group of people who are serious and thoughtful and prayerful, who are deeply loving, who are hospitable, and who are serving together is going to look very different from the world. It's going to be a refuge in a world that is all looking out for number one, that is full of hatred and evil and backstabbing. If Christians are the people God calls us to be, we will not only be different, we will be different in a way that refreshes the world around us. We'll be salt of the earth and a light to the world. For many years, I labored under the impression that being different was really about the first list. We don't do things that the world does. You know, as long as my list when I was younger was, as long as I didn't drink and I didn't cuss and I didn't have fornication, as long as I didn't do some of those things, I was a Christian, and that made me different. And in some ways, it did make me different. But what I didn't notice is that having a list of things I didn't do really didn't make me anything like Jesus. Because Jesus is not just about things he didn't do, but is so much more about what he did. So the heart of following Jesus is always going to be that heart of love and service. And if it is sincerely shown, it will make us different. But not just different in a way that polarizes us from the world, also different in a way that engages the world and draws them closer to us and closer to the Lord. So my encouragement to you is, let's embrace our differentness and follow him. You told me, Matt, that was going to go to the song slide. I don't want that yet. All right, so thank you so much for your attention this morning. This is the time where we offer the invitation for those who are present and who are ready to make a change in their lives, to give their lives to Jesus. Maybe you have never done that, and you have thought seriously about what it means to be a disciple of Jesus, and you're ready to make that commitment to be baptized into Christ and to start that walk as a child of God this morning. We would love to help you do that. Or if there is any need that you have that we can help you with, please come to the front as we stand and sing to encourage you.